This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Have that dump button ready because I honestly have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth.
Get ready for takeoff.
There is no way that I'm tapping out.
You're listening to Unkillable.
If you didn't kill us last night, we are unkillable.
Hosted by Brandon Tierney.
All right, welcome to Unkillable. What's happening, everybody? So this was a very interesting day. So first of all, full disclosure, had a bit of a long night last night. So I was at the Islanders game with a bunch of my coworkers and friends from WFAN. Shout out to the Isles, Mr. Ledecky, the owner, hooked us up in the suite. So that was fantastic. And then I had to leave a little bit early. I had to get back to town. One of our good friends had a 40th birthday party. So not an incredibly late night, but, you know, bouncing around a little bit. Maybe not exactly incredibly spry this morning when I woke up. And I could actually sleep in a little bit, as much as sleeping in as possible with two little kids. Nothing on the schedule today. No indoor baseball, you know, workouts. No games. Football's obviously done. Couple of birthday parties later on in the day. Mommy's going to coordinate that. Daddy's going to sit down and watch football, right? And the funny thing, and then, of course, you know, I gotta go out and get a nice big sandwich today, which I did. A little extra mozzarella. On Italian bread with roast beef sliced thinly and a little pesto, a little drizzle of pesto, a little roasted red pepper, a little cucumber salad and a ginger ale and a bag of oil and vinegar potato chips. So my day was interesting in the sense that, you know, waiting for football to come around. And I'll be honest with you, like I've been so, and Evan is on this. So if Evan sees anything, he's going to break in and let us know about the Soto stuff from a sports perspective, right? Especially as a New York guy on the fan, as a Yankee fan, we have a ton invested in this with Juan Soto. I just really started the day watching the Jets game and, you know, just zipping up and down, scrolling. All right, anything. Well, what's Heyman got? Is Heyman going to hang up on WFAN again today? Shout out to my guy, Keith. He didn't do anything wrong. That was an interesting one. Anyway, I'm scrolling and I'm like, I'm half watching the Jets. You know, Gardner's not playing. There's no Breeze Hall. Basically, I don't give a shit what happens, right? And then I get a little sucked into this game. And I actually started to go against my own strategies here, my own personal philosophies, maybe more so than strategies, as it pertains to tanking. Now, of course, the players are going to play hard. I get that. And tanking is, I think, often misused or not fully used properly when trying to describe a situation. Nobody's going out there purposely losing. But we say that just to further the point. And once the Jets are out of it, which the last decade has basically been by Halloween for the most part, I don't mind if they lose. I've said that many times on the pod in previous years with Adam Gase, even at the end of Rex, I've bet against the Jets just because I don't want them to win at that point. I mean, when it's over. Today was different. Because, you know, I can't fucking stand Miami. I can't stand them. You know, like you look at the AFC East, all right? And all right, the Patriots and their arrogance with all the championships and Belichick sticking it to us all those years when he resigned as head coach, and then of course going on to be this generation's Lombardi. You know, that obviously bothers us, and they've been in our way forever outside of the last 2 years. So, you know, we hate them, but we respect them. All right. How could you not respect Tom Brady as a competitor? We know what they did to us this century, right? The Buffalo Bills are a lot like us, except that they finally figured things out. Now they've got a franchise quarterback, which obviously is never seemingly is never going to happen for us here. And you know, we're a little jealous, but we respect them up there. You know, they're blue collar fans. They show up and they show out even when they're a 6-win team. Like Buffalo Bills football is their religion. It's an amazing culture up there. So even when they beat us, whatever, begrudgingly, I know I do. I respect the Bills. I'm like, if the Bills got to the Super Bowl, and I'm sitting there with a Thurman Thomas or a Jim Kelly jersey on, but if the Bills won the Super Bowl in a crazy way, even though they were in our division, I'd be incredibly happy for their fans because they've been great fans for a long time. Then you got the Dolphins. Let the Dolphins enter the chat room, you know, and it's always like the Dolphins are like that awkward joke at a party where everyone's like, all right, a little too far, buddy. Probably should have kept that one in your brain. Or just something that just never feels right. Their uniforms, cheesy, white, teal, orange. It's like a soft European soccer team, right? Their stadium looks like a soccer pitch. Their fans are whatever. And really, when I go back to my childhood, when I first became a Jets fan, it wasn't the Bills who were in my way, and certainly the Patriots weren't. They were terrible as well. And the Jets had some pretty good teams when I was young. It was the Dolphins, and that goes back to the 82 season with Shula, championship game, AFC, when they, listen, we have to regurgitate history. The field was fucking wet. They neutralized our speed, and what happened. All right, so as I'm watching this game today, it hit me again. I can't stand the Dolphins. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go against my inner football philosophies, tanking. And I'm kind of getting into this game a little bit, not like a lunatic because our season's obviously over. But I'm like, you know, if we could just drive the stake in their heart and just end their season, like mathematically eliminate them, I'll take some solace in that. Like I really will. And the game's going along and Aaron Rodgers is zipping some passes. And some of the young kids, Isaiah Davis, Braylon Allen, they're certainly involved in the run game. They were catching some passes. Like I got into it a little bit. I'm like, and I'm sitting there. And even though I've said this on a few pods, like my official position on Aaron Rodgers is I want to move on next year without him. I've said that I'm on the record. However, I've also left the door slightly ajar where if they were to bring in, you know, like a Mike Vrabel, like a John Gruden, a veteran type, somebody like that, who deemed him still worthy of playing, and they wanted the coach wanted to roll it back with Rodgers one more year, tighten up a few things, maybe change the defensive alignment, whatever it might be, and obviously get some new players in a few spots here, then I would be okay with that. Now, after a game like today, I'm more okay with that, quite frankly. You start to see, you know, flashes the last couple of weeks where his mobility's coming back a little bit, not like he's running for first downs, but you know, the quick, you know, pitter patter of the feet, getting out of the pocket, going left, going right, throwing some really beautiful passes. And I'm into it. I'm like, all right, let's just go bag the win. You know, you're not going to win many games the rest of the way. You're going to be picking top seven, top eight. Even if they would have lost today, in all prop, which they did, but I'm talking about my mindset, in all probability, not going to have access to the first or the second pick. Right now, the Giants have the Giants. They miss a chippy. Good God almighty. God, Graham Gano gets a block. They are just, they're worse than to watch than the Jets. I mean, I'm going back and forth just because I'm going to talk about the Giants tomorrow on The Fan. And that stadium just sounds like a morgue. I mean, it is just hopeless out there with the Giants. At least the Jets had a little juice today. And then just when you think they're going to pull it off, even though the modern NFL, you know, 2 minutes-ish a timeout or two. I mean, you got teams, especially the way Miami runs their offense wide open. And they could go down the field in 35 seconds if they had to, you know, throw to the sidelines, use their speed. So I knew the game wasn't over, but the Jets take the lead and what happens? I mean, an automatic, unacceptable, inexcusable, maddening mistake on special teams. Basically fielded at the one. I forget who it was. As his momentum, if you can visualize this, watching your TV on the right part of your screen, the ball's bouncing a little bit, basically taking him to the pylon. So he secures the ball at the one. You look up, he's at the 50. Wow, what a stunner. You know, and Carlson got absolutely cracked. He threw his body in there, so you respect that. Oh, my good God. Yeah, it's just, they just put you in pretzels, man. They twist you up in knots where, you know, and I've said this as well. I don't even know how to watch the Jets anymore. Like, I started today, I'm like, Soto, all right, what are we up to? 7:30, 7:40, Yankees, Mets, let's go. Somebody breaks something here. And by the way, just as a quick aside, the Soto money is absolute, it's stupid at this point. Now, I still think he's going to be a Yankee. I still think to an extent that Boris is playing the Mets a little bit here. And Cohen's got the money to play the long game. Sure, I'll play. Just keep throwing some money in the middle of the table to get the number up to a point where, because you know Hal doesn't want to lose the stare down. And I still think he's a Yankee when it's all said and done. I think, you know, probably 70% confidence with that. But my whole mindset from the moment I woke up today and before I went to get the heroes, I said the roast beef and the mozzarella. I'm just Soto, just constant, you know, reading articles, refreshing here. And then the game starts. And I honestly didn't care. I thought they were going to get destroyed, as I said Friday on the Fan. I thought it would be like 31-14, 35-17. I just really didn't think the Jets would be able to contain their speed. Not that Soft Gardner's had a good year, but he can at least run. So anyway, in a long, you know, convoluted way, I get back to, like, not only do they not win, and, you know, I'm not just going to reach for the low-hanging fruit and rant and rave and curse and, you know, incessantly or, you know, gratuitously here, because you know where I stand and I know where you stand. But the longer these games go on, what I do find myself, and this absolutely sucks, this is really, I think this is like the most disheartening aspect for me as somebody who used to love, like all of you, sitting down and watching football. You know, you get the, for the Jets perspective, you get the CBS music, you know, coming up and, you know, we know who the announcers are when it's a big game. And of course, we know, I'm not taking any shots, but let's be honest, we know who the announcers are when it's a C or a D level game, which is where the Jets usually are. And it just sounds different. It's boring. It's almost like I want to go to sleep. Like, I had more energy this morning after a couple of the drinks last night. And I actually did leave something out as I'm in my office this morning. So I wasn't completely useless before I got the food right around this office, right in my home. I don't know, probably around 10 o'clock or so, I'm having a cup of coffee and I'm doing the Soto stuff. My son comes in. He's like, Dad, because now basketball season's, you know, starting to fire up. He's like, Dad, can we go shoot? Can we go work on some stuff? I got a hoop in the yard, but not a ton of space. And I'm like, yeah. And I my daughter had to go to a party. So when we opened up the door to let her out to the, to go in the car of the mom who was picking her up, I'm like, oh, it's pretty nice out. And in my own mind, I'm like, you know, even though I was a little tired, I'm like, all right, if he asked me to do something today, whether it's throw or hit grounders or, you know, go take some shot, whatever, I'm like, I'll do it. So I went out. So because there's no gyms available on a Sunday morning, last second, we go to the park, old school. Like my dad, like not even, it wasn't even a park. It was like a little rinky dink hoop. And it felt like the 80s, you know, when I was playing. It was awesome. And I was beautiful out, a little windy, which affected the jump shots here. But it was just a great day. But even during the workout and then getting the sandwiches and I'm where I live and how far it takes to play to get, how long it takes to get to the store. Yeah. I know how many people are in the store to get the food. It's like, I roll back in at like 12:50. Now back in the day, if I was even remotely close to missing a snap, I'd get angst. I'd get overwhelmed with FOMO. Like, I can't miss anything. Jeez, you know, now I'm just like, yeah, whatever, you know, games recording, although I actually did forget to record this one, but I got home in plenty of time. The point is, does anybody really care? And the answer generally is no. And I cared today. I cared today as the game was going on. And they did suck me in a little bit here. You know, I'm looking at this once. Jets are up 15-13 at the half, right? And the first pass that Rodgers throws was a beauty to Wilson for 46 yards down the right side. Now, it was a great job by Garrett, who's been really good. There was a point early, I'm like, he's not playing as well. Garrett Wilson's had a really good season, all things considered. He's a stud. His footwork, and for a little guy, like, he's not strong, like, outwardly physically strong, but man, he makes people miss and he doesn't go down easy. He's got ballet feet. Like, he's money. But I did think if it was maybe, I'm going to nitpick, if it was maybe a slightly, and I'd have to go and rewind it, I'm not sure if Rodgers was under real duress there. I don't think he was under incredible duress, a little. But if that throws like a yard, if you're watching this now, instead of going here to the sideline, if it's like a yard here, you lead him, that's a 70-yard bomb. Either way, that was a great start to the drive. I'm like, all right, here we go. Looking pretty good. Adams had the beautiful throw by Rodgers on the rollout, a couple of yards right by the pylon. And you know, even when they went for it on fourth and two, Isaiah Davis, he picked up 6-8 yards, whatever it was. So there were things that were going on. I'm like, okay. And then their next possession, they had a 3rd and 8. Isaiah Davis got 11 yards. Wilson on 3rd and 4 got 8 yards, beat Jalen Ramsey. It was just, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, and then Carlson, it's the 40 yard or whatever, but man, oh man, no matter what happens, they just know how to lose. The Jets are now 0-7 this year in games decided by 6 points or less. And think about that. Now, they didn't, I would have liked to have seen, you know, Miami kick a field goal in overtime. Of course, they get the ball first. And of course, you know, the tight end, Jonnu Smith, who was completely invisible for 95% of the game. Oh, let's just use him at overtime. Think. I think it was 3 catches, including the game winning touchdown. Like, how did you forget about that guy? I don't know. He's on film all year. He's had a good year. And it would have been nice to see Rodgers get the football, but man, 0-6, 6 points or less. Like, think about that. I don't know what's more painful, considering like where our mindset was coming into the year and what we thought the Jets could possibly be. You know, if you told me, hell, Jets are going to have 6 games decided by 6 points or less without knowing their actual record. You told me this in August, or, you know, at a Labor Day barbecue as we start to talk up the season and getting fired up. I'm like, they'll win 4. Minimally, they'll win 3. They'll be 3-3, and they'll probably blow a couple teams out. And, you know, along the way, I thought the Jets would win 10 or 11. I really think more than that. And here we are, 3 wins, and it is, you know, next week is basically mid-December at this point, and it's been a colossal, painful, hurtful, I don't want to say predictable season, because I don't think that this was predictable. I think that there's a lot of things with the New York Jets that are predictable. But even this one seemed to defy the scripts that they generally present us with over the years. So I guess we'll give them points on being original again, you know, twist it with our emotions a little bit, playing with our minds again. And here we are, another loss. So let me make sure that my lieutenant today is okay. Evan, the younger, probably more resilient Jets fan. How you doing there, buddy? Another tough course, Evan.
It's just crazy because sometimes, like, I'm making this lower third that we have in front of us on the screen. Yep. And like, sometimes during a game, I'll start typing it out and I'll put like win over Dolphins. And then right before the game's over, I'm like, I got to start deleting this. It's lost to Dolphins, you know?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
Every game, it's like they had that one game where it was like 31-8 or something. So I was so checked out. I was like,
sure. Okay. Oh God.
The last couple games, it just feels like every time there's at least one part where you're like, oh crap, we might have a shot. And then it just like, oh, nope. Slowly.
Yep. Well, I tweeted this some point in the third quarter. I said, I hate Miami. Winning compromises draft slot, but I want this one. Young kids are contributing. Rodgers looks pretty good. A rare, fun football Sunday. And then below it, so far, period. And here we are. And, you know, listen, we've been doing this now a couple of months together. You know how I am on the show. I think you know you have a pretty good sense of whether it's here or WFN or whatever, the stuff I put out there over the years. Like, I think you kind of have a sense of what I'm thinking during these games. But when I tell you that I, at one point, I really wanted to win this game, does that surprise you?
No, because I feel like it's like kind of an innate thing, especially in division, even when you're trying to lose. And maybe it was just me, but it's like with this game, I kind of just wanted to make the Dolphins like basically contention, because it's like they're still in the mix. And now, like, it's like the Broncos, I think, would be the last team in at like 7-5 or something like that. And they were like, if they lost this game, it was going to be damn near impossible for them to get in. So I think in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, I know that we want to lose to try to get closer to the top pick. But at the same time, taking out an in-division rival, even in your worst year, is like kind of like what you want to do. Like, it's kind of like the Michigan thing, right? Where it's like they had a crappy ass year, but then you
beat Ohio State.
You're like, oh, all right, that wasn't that bad of a year. We beat them, knocked them out.
Yeah, yeah. At least Michigan fans, though, have a championship that where they can at least in their own minds, you know, justify, all right, you know, hey, listen, we want to beat Ohio State no matter what. But even though it's been a fairly empty season, you know, by their standards for Michigan, they just won a championship. So they're still, you know, and they're always at the center of the college football universe, being on TV and getting the big recruit. They just got a kid for $10.5 million. They flipped him from LSU to play. I think it was LSU to play quarterback for him next season. So, yeah, I tell you, I look at this and I don't know that I've really, I haven't really worn these glasses too often where certainly the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, because I almost don't care about next season, because I can't, like, I'm just a little emotionally tapped out from this season. But this, you know, this game today, I'm looking, I'm saying, all right, I mean, you know, there's some interesting pieces popping up here. And, you know, CJ Mosley obviously had a really good career. You're going to have to move on from him. And I've got to look at the money and see what happens there. He's been out for a long time. No Gardner, no Breece Hall. So I was looking forward to seeing him. You know, Davis and Braylon Allen, and Braylon Allen, who started the year really well. Remember, he had that great catch at down in Tennessee, that couple of really good plays, ran for some scores. I did find myself a little bit like, all right, what could be here next year, or who can be here next year, and what can they squeeze out of this? And, you know, I got to tell you, I found myself thinking again, and no disrespect for Ulbrich, he's been, unfortunately, he's going to become collateral damage due to the ineptitude of the owner, because he's going to be gone. And he was a very good defensive coordinator, and he's going to get picked up, but he should not be out of a job next season. It's just the unfair circumstances that he's going to be out of a job here. But I'm saying, all right, you got Mike Vrabel on the side. If you have Mike on the sidelines, I don't know. They're probably winning this game. It's like they're probably winning the Colts game, just like they're probably winning the second Patriots game. And, you know, a few of the other games, maybe not the Cardinals game. That was just a start to finish slop fest. No show. But I am beginning to.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era. So join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To get to the point, as I rally a little bit, hence the unkillable moniker, I'm getting to the point here, Ev, where at least I'm galvanized is too strong, slightly encouraged that next year doesn't have to be a complete reset, a complete knock it down and rebuild. And you get the right coach and 2, 3, 4 extra pieces total, maybe 2 on offense, 2 on defense. I mean, Jets could be a wild card team next year. I honestly, now people laugh at that. Sure. I honestly believe that.
Yeah. And it's like, even when you look back at the season, it was like the first couple of games we lost because Greg Zuerlein was missing every kick. If we had Carlson the first couple of games, you know, we may have had a couple extra wins. So you got that there. And then, you know, like you were saying, I was kind of looking at like the running back situation, because it was like eventually you're going to have to decide between the three. And it's like Garrett Wilson, if any Jet fan thinks he should be gone, I don't know what they're talking about. So it's like, obviously he's the one that you clearly have to pay. So I was thinking, like, if you get Isaiah Davis to be decent and you either have him be you know, you either have him be with Braylon Allen or you get another running back and kind mm-hmm. of do what Detroit's doing, similar with like the Gibbs, David Montgomery thing.
Sure, sure.
You not need to have the bell cow in Breece Hall. So then you can kind of like focus the money on Garrett Wilson and then look elsewhere, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a really smart way to look at it. I mean, listen, Garrett Wilson's going to be hopefully a Jet for forever. And, you know, based on the early numbers, the first couple of the years, if he stays healthy, I mean, imagine him with good quarterback play. He's had shit quarterback play basically since day one. Imagine if he's got some, like, eventually I would think he's going to find himself playing with a stud. I think, I mean, got a chance to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, just look at the numbers. I mean, just, he's a really, really good player. But with Breece, and you know, Breece was, I loved him at Iowa State. I loved the draft choice. I loved the start to his career, before that was in Denver where he ripped up his knee, right? That was the Denver game a couple years back. Yeah, because that was the same game Vera Tucker got hurt as well.
Yeah, it was like everybody got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. But when Breece first burst on the scene as a non-first-round running back, wasn't making big money. But I think now, I don't want to say that I'm looking to get rid of him, but you're going to get to a point where you're going to have to pay him, you know, probably more than you want to. And he had a chance now of more than a year, fully recovered from the torn ACL. I know he's fast, and I know he's had a couple of good games. Breece Hall has not had a dominant season. Matter of fact, he's had a disappointing season. He's had a subpar season. He's had a down season. So, yeah, I like the idea. You know, you still need, you know, two guys on the old line. And, you know, and I wrote this down too, and it was a fairly innocuous play. It was early in the game. If I say to you, I'm going to let you guess, and then I'm going to have you read some of the comments. We'll do some reacting here. If I said, all right, Ev, I don't think you'll get this because, number one, there's so many players on the field, so it's not against the NBA. Or like the Yankees or Mets lineup. But if I said, who's the most disappointing player to you this year? Who would you say? It's an off the board choice. I don't think you'll get it. So I'm giving you a hint there to be creative.
Is off the board.
It's not McDonald. He's been a little quiet.
I said Sauce at first, but obviously he's not an off the board guy.
No, wait. Let's get him by the proper name. Who?
Sauce.
Yeah, but it's not him. Okay, keep going.
I was thinking both of the tight ends haven't done anything.
Here we go. Keep going. Conklin. Okay.
I'm trying to think of who else. I know.
No. You're on it. But it's not Conklin. End. It's Rucker.
Conklin, Rucker.
It's Rucker. Can I ask everyone? Now, I know he's a Long Island kid, and his dad's a huge Jets fan. And, man, the night that he was drafted, we were all pumped. His pops was going. I mean, it's just what a dream come true. My God, wow. It's awesome. And it seems like his family is great. And, you know, he played at Ohio State, and I watched him at Ohio State, and I liked him. Can he catch a fucking pass? I mean, wide open. It's 22-yard gain. Just drops it. And – you know, I don't want to overreact to one drop, but the problem with Rucker that, and I thought he had a little more of this, he's got no wiggle. Like, even when he catches the ball, he never makes anybody miss. He goes down right away. So he's not like a force of nature in terms of just, you know, this vicious blocker or where he lowers his head and when he does get the ball and he rams through people and he gets those 4 or 5 extra tough yards. And he, you know, it's like he's running open in the secondary because he flies. I say this with all the respect, but like, who is he? What's his ceiling? He just looks like a guy. Just a guy. Right? Yeah,
he's not anybody that you're going to do anything with. It's one of those guys where it almost feels like it's like if he was a small school, it's like sometimes in the draft, it's like if you're a big school guy that does nothing at the big school, but it's like, hey, I was an Ohio State tight end. They picked me in like the 4th or 5th round. Whereas if you're like a small school guy who puts up insane numbers, they don't pick you at all because they're like, you played nobody. I feel like he's kind of fits that big school, but didn't really do much in college. But it was like, hey, they recruited him for a reason kind of situation.
Understood.
Going a little bit.
All right. Hit me with some messages here. What do you got?
All right. So the main one that people are kind of focusing in on is the fact that Davante Adams went out with 51 seconds left, went out of bounds, and then forced them to kick it and then gave the Dolphins 50 seconds left. They said that, like, you know, you shouldn't have allowed that. You should have stayed in bounds. You should have. I mean, it was kind of like a tricky situation because the route he was running was leading to the sideline.
Yeah.
But that was the big one. They said, like, why wouldn't you run out the clock and kick the field goal and give them no chance to come back?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, the Jets' time management, let me see. At one pet, they're just overall their ability to operate the basic stuff is horrendous. I mean, there's a reason why they've got the most offensive penalties in football. I know this is an offensive thing, but, you know, it speaks to their sloppiness. Did they have an extra penalty after this? I don't know if they did. Fairly late in the game, I remember they were, because it was up on the screen, I wrote it down, 10 penalties for 83 yards. I mean, you're giving a team, and I actually think there was an additional penalty now that I think about it. Yeah, I think that there definitely was. You're around the 100 yards of penalty yards. It is just amazing. I think that you can make the case very easily that, remember when they, I don't know why they did this. I mean, I go on the air right away, so I got to hear some of the post-game stuff. Not that there's necessarily justification to doing this, but why take that snap right before the two-minute warning? Run it down.
Yeah.
Run it down. Like, oh, my God. Even Rod, you know, well, I can't get on Rodgers too bad. I thought he did some really good things. I really did. But, yeah, I get it with the Devontae Adams. I think that's, you know, that's lower on the list for me. Yeah. But fair. That's a fair point of criticism. What else you got?
And the other one was, of course, I mean, I don't know if anybody would have noticed it in real time if they didn't show the replay, but missing Garrett Wilson wide open in the middle of the field on that final drive.
Which one now? I'm sorry. Say that again.
I think it was the final drive of the game. He missed Garrett Wilson wide open. They showed the replay where Garrett was like jumping up and down.
Yes.
Like, feet on the ground going crazy.
And I hate when wide receivers do that. I get it. You know, I actually don't mind in this situation, because how many times we've talked about this here on the pod, how many times you see Rodgers go, like, we've talked about this many times. Like, I think Aaron's body language, it was good today, has not been great this year. I think he's been very quick to go like that rather than the thumb at the chest. I think he's absorbed some blame in some of these press conferences and some of the Tuesday chats with McAfee, but it's always like offset by then almost equally distributing the blame elsewhere. It's never a full ownership. It's like half assing, half stepping it. You know, I don't love it. God, by the way, anything on Soto? Are you scrolling for me, or what do we got? Anything on Soto?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, there's like some, like, you know, really like not reliable people being like, oh, it's finalized. You know, like these scoops and all this random crap on Twitter. But I mean, that doesn't
really are you a Mets? Are you a Mets Jets guy? Or are you a Yankees Jets guy?
I'm a Mets Jets guy. So it's a weird situation, because it's like you could either take it one of two ways when it comes to that, because it almost feels like it's either taking longer because Boris is trying to get the Yankees up to the number he wants. And then
which is what I said before.
Or it's like he has a number in mind for any team to get to. And then that would be, but that's a lot more risky. But, you know, like, oh, if you go to 800, you know, you got him kind of crap.
I mean, that's come on to 800. And Juan Soto was amazing, but he can't run. He's not a good right fielder. Trust me, I want him back in front of Aaron Judge. But at what cost here? I mean, you're already in the deep end of the pool. You got to flush in 10, 15 more million to fend off Cohen. You do what you got to do. But it's going to be interesting, because I think the two big stories about Soto coming in were, okay, how hard would Cohen flex all the loot that he's got? He's worth $20 billion. And, you know, this is something that I've talked about for well over a year. Sal's been saying, and I get it. Sal's like, hey, listen, you better have the highest offer and you better be by a decent amount, because that was the whole allure when Cohen bought the Mets, to change the way business was done, because the Wilpons, you know, nickel and diamond, whatever. So the first narrative would be, does Cohen blow them out of the water? And he didn't blow them out of the water with Yamamoto, if you recall. Yeah. They had the same exact offer as the Dodgers, and the Yankees had more AAV. So respectable offer, I think it was 325 was the final number. He wanted to go to Dodgers, fine. He didn't go bonkers on that. And, you know, let's say the Yankees get him for 730 or 740. And at the last second, Cohen's like, all right, hey, 750 last offer. And he's like, nah, we want to stay with the Yankees. I don't think Cohen's going to look that good, even though, you know, 740 or whatever it might be is an inordinate amount of money, bordering on irresponsible and reckless. Yeah. That's the one thing that I think, and many think he needed to do, was to really distinguish himself as that big dog with the checkbook. That's the Mets side. From the Yankee perspective, again, I'm talking about non-Soto, non-player stuff. From Hal's perspective, all you hear, and it's a little bit, at this point, it's just somewhat inaccurate. Oh, Hal's not like George, which he's not. He doesn't spend like his dad. Get it. but it's always, you know, a three. He's always top three in payroll. Hey, made sure Aaron Judge got paid. He wanted Garrett Cole, made sure he got paid. Rodon gave him a big offer, whether or not it was right or wrong, cut him $160 million check. Back in 09, he got the share, got CC, got AJ Burnett for $250 million. Like, when he spends, he spends. And the thought on Howe would be, is he going to cheap out here? And if he does, then he was going to get crushed in the court of public opinion. I'm actually at the point now where no matter what happens, I think that I think that both owners come out okay. I mean, shit, if Hal gets up to 725 and or 740 and he just goes for a little bit more to the Mets, I mean, I don't, I people will crush Hal, but I think it'll be unfair. Yeah. And you know, I just need this shit to end. I mean, I'm tired. I'm totally tired already. Can't take it anymore, Evan. I mean, what I'm saying, let's go sign the freaking contract.
No, I know. It's like, it's an everyday thing. Every person's like, oh, it's going to happen on the weekend. And then it's like, oh, well, it's not happening on the weekend. It's already 5 o'clock. We don't got many hours left in the weekend. You know,
I know. I mean, I guess, you know, that what, and I said this on Friday, I would say to Sal, I'm like, I think this is the last show that we're going to do without knowing where Soto's going. Because generally Friday's kind of a news dump and you don't really maximize the exposure there. So I didn't think they would do it Friday. We all kind of thought it would be Saturday, and we were all kind of hoping it would happen when we were at the Islanders game together.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Sal and Evan and Hoff and, you know, Barash and Lukey. Like, it would have been Keith, Yankee, Met fans. It would have been cool. So we thought that was the money spot or the money guess. It didn't happen. I didn't think it would happen today. Not that it wouldn't usurp, especially these shit teams, the Jets and the Giants. But, like, if I'm Boris – and I'm trying to maximize coverage. I don't know if you drop it in the middle of an NFL Sunday. So that's, I would think tomorrow by way before noon, we got to get it, right? Got to. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like with Adames coming off the board, granted, it's like he probably reached a number where the Yankees and whoever other said no anyway. So it was like he was going to probably be a logical pivot maybe. But
For Adames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, it's a weird thing because it's like everybody's waiting for it. They keep reporting on all the pivots, but then nobody actually knows. And the weird thing about it from like a Mets fan perspective is it's like the Yankees have pretty much been reported on like Fried, Burns, Teoscar Hernandez, pretty much like all the guys to pivot.
Christian Walker.
Whereas the Mets so far, it's basically like they basically not said it, but said that like, we're not going to go after the top two pitching guys because we don't believe in like signing an ace.
I know.
And then I don't really know what, I guess they're just going to pay Pete whatever he wants, but then it's just, you're putting the same team back out there. I don't really.
Well, if they lose Soto, if they get Soto, I think Pete's gone. If they lose Soto, I think you got to find a way to, number one, Pete's good. I'm not as huge of an Alonso fan as some. I think he's very limited, but he's a home run hitter and he's a lifelong Met. So I get that. If they lose Soto, you know, number one, you don't want to lose 35, 40 home runs and not get Soto. But also I think the wound for the Met fan, I think Cohen's going to feel compelled to at least bring back, you know, one of their own who someday might be a Hall of Famer and will have his Mets number retired. So I get that. But the Adames thing, no, that was perfect orchestration. That was done to me. That wasn't, I don't think, I mean, I could be wrong, but the way I see it, I don't think it was like, hey, all right, Mets, we got this from the Giants. Hey, Yankees, we got this from the Giants. You guys want to match? I think it was, no, bang. You guys think you have a plan B. Now you're fucked because now you don't.
True.
So, you know, so by doing that, by taking him off the board, what happens? Oh, shit. The Mets and the Yanks are like, all right, let's do 10 more, 20 more, 30 more, 40 more, 50 million. And the numbers keep going up for Soto. I think it was played out that way by design. Perfect. Listen, at the end of the day, the Jets and the Giants remain the absolute eyesore of the New York sports scene. You think, I'm going to wrap it up with this, because I talked about the game and I took you through the Rodgers stuff and some of the young kids, whatever. I'll talk more about it on the Fan tomorrow. Obviously, you guys can hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Obviously, subscribe to the pod, spread the word, and let everybody know about this. I appreciate the support so far. I truly do. But like, if you look at the other New York, I'll do this very fast. All right, so I'm going to write it down. Yankees, New York Mets, New York Jets, New York Giants, the Brooklyn Nets. We'll do the three hockeys. Obviously, the Knicks. I mean, geez, I love the Knicks. I didn't like that loss against the Pistons, but I love the Knicks. Carl didn't play, so they'll win that game next time. All right. You look at the state of these teams, very, very loosely done, because I'm not a huge hockey fan, Rangers are a mess. All right. So I don't know what the hell's going to happen with trades. They're a disaster. Got some talent, but they're a little soft. They got to mix shit up, right? So I'm going to put the Rangers over here. The Devils are fast and can score and have solidified the goal, the goaltending a little bit. Devils are pretty good. Isles just don't have a ton of talent. So that's the three hockey. Boom. Short and sweet. The Nets play hard. They try to build a culture. I respect what they're doing. They're short on talent, but they're pivoting. So I'm not trying to minimize the Nets, but they're at least playing hard, and you could see the earliest stage of maybe a culture. The Knicks are back. I hated that loss to the Pistons, as I said, but the Knicks are going to be right there with a chance to win the championship. Arrow up. Obviously, you'd love to see the Yankees get Soto and roll back Soto and Judge for the next, 5-6 years of Judge's prime, basically a modern day Ruth and Garrick, right? But even without him, the Yankees are going to get 2-3 other players. If they don't get Soto, you got Judge, you got Cole, you got some young kids. Yanks are going to win 90 something games or a playoff team. The Mets are either going to get Soto, and if they do, that changes their profile. They're coming off a good year. City was popping. They've got an owner who's obviously very active. Their general manager is very good. So while I do think a little bit that the Mets arrow is a little overstated, because I think a lot of the stories from a year ago, which were great, I think they were stories of overachievement, and I don't know that they could do it again next year, like Iglesias or even Severino, who's gone, or Manaea if he stays. You know what I'm talking about, Met fans. Yep. But they're going culturally in the right direction. Then you look at these two shitbag teams, the Jets and the Giants. The Jets can't win. The Giants, they haven't won at home yet. It's their lowest point total in 25 years. Did you see what they flew over MetLife today?
Yeah.
You see that banner? Did you see it? If you didn't see it, it's okay. Did you see it or no?
I think so. I saw it. I'm blanking on what it exactly is.
Well, I'll tell you. Like, they did this years ago with Idzik, too, like fire Idzik for the Jets.
Oh, gotcha.
It said something along the lines of, just end the circus, or like it said, Mara's name, Mara, just end this. It was either circus or whatever. It's just so embarrassing. Empty seats again.
Mara, enough. Please fix this dumpster fire.
That's it. Dumpster fire. Yeah. I mean, think about where these teams are, and there is a better than, I would say, I think there's a better than 70% chance encompassing both teams that neither team has their franchise quarterback next year either.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because their recent drafts haven't shown us that they know how to draft. You know, like the Jets have missed on three straight. Now, granted, I know Darnold's going crazy with another team now, but
five touchdowns.
Terms of playing in New York at MetLife, nobody's been good. The Giants have failed on the one since Eli Manning. So it's like, who knows if they had a draft? I mean, I know it's a different GM, but who knows if Shane's going to even be here or whatever. So it's crazy.
Well, the beat goes on, Jet fans. Listen, if you see another message or two that you find interesting, hit me with a message and maybe I'll end up on that. I see a bunch to the right, but do you see anything that jumps out?
Yeah, so somebody said this is Rodgers' first 300-yard game, which was kind of blew my mind. I didn't realize that. Of people early on were talking about Drew Aller, the Penn State quarterback,
has
all of a sudden become like the apple of everybody's eye. He went from like maybe not a first-rounder. Now people are like, I'd take him over Ward. I'd take him over Sanders.
Here we go.
That's his regular draft season, crap.
Here we go.
But there's a lot of that. And of course, there was the – some Dolphins fans early on that I don't know exactly what they said, but they were saying a lot of like, oh, well, we might make the playoffs and Jets. And then it was like, well, what have you won? What have you won? They were doing the comparison. It's like, guys, it's like two people that haven't done anything throwing stones at each other.
I can't stand Miami. Like, I guess that's how I really started the show. Everything about them, man. And it goes back to not only when I was young, my first Jets team that I was watching, but for some reason, like in my neighborhood, and back then, unlike now, like you walk through, city park or suburb, and you got kids rocking jerseys of every play, like Steph Curry, Mahomes. Like, it's not as regional. Growing up, it was you're a Yankee or a Met fan, you're a Jet or a Giant fan, and you're a Knicks fan, and then you're a St. John's fan in Brooklyn or Queens or Long Island. That's it. Like, there's nothing to discuss. Now, if you came from a family that was maybe you had an older brother who was like a Steeler fan because they were on TV, or and you got a lot of this, or the Cowboys because they were on TV a lot back then. Yeah, there were a couple of the Steeler and Cowboy fans, but the Dolphin fans just always bothered me the most because that was Marino, who was unbelievable. They had the Hall of Fame quarterback. They had the Hall of Fame coach and Don Shula. And, like, you know, we had Richard Todd and Ken O'Brien and a couple of different – and Kenny was okay. But you know what I'm saying. So, like, my earliest football thorn is Miami. And, like, this was the day where I said, screw it. I don't care what I always subscribe to. I want to lose. And I kind of went into the game. Well, I went into the game, not quite candidly, not giving a shit. And then I said, you know, I started seeing things develop. I'm like, all right, you know, hey, Isaiah Davis and Allen, they look good. They're running, you know, all things I've already hit. Don't need to get repetitive. I got sucked into it a little bit. And my disdain for the Dolphins was reignited a little bit. And I wanted to beat them. And I kept looking at their record. What are they, 5-8 at this point? Were they 5-8 going in?
I think 5-7. Now they're 6-7.
Okay.
They're the worst 6-7 team in the NFL or something.
So. You're right. It was 5-7. You're right. Because yeah. I'm like, all right, if they lose this, yeah, I guess they could still finish 9-8 and have maybe a puncher's chance. But that's not happening because Denver's okay. And the teams in front of them is, you know, and you know who they are. I thought we had a chance to just send those however many Dolphin fans, like diehard Dolphin fans there are, send them home. Instead, you know, we lose in overtime and the train keeps on trucking. Many derailments, you know, many blown tires, many electrical malfunctions along the way. But eventually we will get to the stop that says Wintersville. And it is a long, arduous ride as we seemingly stop at every single city in America to get to that mythical Wintersville town. But we will eventually get there. And when we get there, we're going to have a fucking blast, dude. That's what we're going to do. We're just setting we are planting seeds now to have unlimited, incalculable amounts of fun when we are relevant. How's that? Good with that?
Yeah, good. Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me.
All right, brother. Hey, listen, good job. I do have to got to check the basketball schedule. I've got a St. John's game on Wednesday night that I do or that I will do. So I don't think we'll do the pod on Wednesday. We'll definitely do one on Thursday. We've had one guest so far. I've got a few irons in the fire for some other ones. Thursday, I know I've said this before. Thursday, I am targeting a guest just to kind of, you know, push this forward. Coaches, GM stuff. Now we're going to start getting into, you know, the little bit of a deeper stage and who these candidates are going to be. And listen, I got to watch the Penn State quarterback more. But yeah, I mean, we're at a point now where, I mean, everything comes into play. Like, let's just say the Jets have the 8th pick. I don't know. I'm throwing something out there, and whether it's the kid from Penn State or somebody else that is not a top 10 pick. You can't justify that. Hey, there's going to be a lot of situations. Now, you have to do the right thing, which is always, you know, the biggest issue with this team. But you could move back and you could, you know, collect some assets, get some players, whatever, and then maybe get a quarterback late in round one and maybe bring back Rodgers for one more year, Vrabel or whomever wants him. There's still a lot of things to discuss. So I appreciate you guys. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'm back tomorrow at 10 on the Fan with my guy Sal. And we're getting Soto stuff tomorrow. There's not a thought in my mind that we will not be talking Soto to the Yankees or the Mets or the Red Sox or the Dodgers. Ain't going to Toronto tomorrow. And we'll do that on the Fan. I'll catch you Thursday on the pod. Hey, spread the word. Share it. Spotify, Apple, Unkillable Pod. I appreciate you guys. And Now go watch some real football, which is what I'm about to do. I'll see you later, guys. Thank you.